Hello, everybody, and welcome in to another special podcast right here on Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zaglul, and on today's show, we're talking everything NFL and NBA with our special guest. To be more specific, we'll talk about the Bears and their season coming up, some other national NFL headlines, the reconfiguration of the NBA after free agency, plus our guest's amazing sports broadcasting career. Now, before we get started, make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags, on Twitter at John Z Sports, and now on Facebook at John Zaglul. Today's show is brought to you by Moochie World, where inspiration meets creation. Call 708-247-2100 to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art classes for adults and children. Moochie World, creativity at its finest. And by the Windy City Thunderbolts. Celebrate the team's 20th anniversary season by purchasing tickets today. Call 708-489-2255 for your chance to be a part of history this summer in Crestwood. It's now time for our special guest. He began his sports broadcasting career in 1982 as the TV and radio voice of the Kansas City Kings. After a brief stint calling basketball games at the University of Kansas, he became the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs in 1985. Over the next 13 years, he would also go on to call national basketball and football games for NBC, ESPN, Fox Sports, Turner Sports, and CBS. Today, he broadcasts NFL games on CBS and Westwood One, NBA games on TNT, and Green Bay Packers preseason games, all while serving as the voice of the NBA 2K video game series. Please welcome Kevin Harlan back to the show. Kevin, how are you doing today, and thank you for being here on the show.
John, great to hear your voice and be on with you and visit with you. Doing great. Looking forward to the upcoming NFL season, which has a lot of historical significance, being the 100th anniversary of the first NFL season, pro football season, and a lot going on, and that makes it, I think, for a very interesting season from the beginning to end. I think we're going to see a lot of fascinating stories develop as the year goes on.
Well, Kevin, let's start today with the NFL, beginning specifically with the Chicago Bears. Now, obviously, this was a team that last year had one of the best defensive units in football, but in the end, it was their kicking of all things that cost them a chance at a deep run in the playoffs. Putting that aside, though, the Bears entered this season with very little roster turnover, and Matt Nagy in his second year at the helm. So with that in mind, what do you expect from this Bears team here in 2019?
Oh, I think they'll be great. I think they'll pick up right where they left off. If they can get this kicking situation straightened out and feel comfortable with what they've got, I think it's no doubt they'll be the front runner in the division, certainly the favorite in the division. Green Bay's got a new coach. I think Detroit is still searching for what they are, and the Vikings probably with some question marks about their quarterback. But the Bears have got the right coach. Looks like they've got the right quarterback, and everything that they seem to be doing is making a lot of sense. Mac, with the great season last year, just cascaded on to one great defensive outing after another. So you got that defense, play in that stadium, rabid fans. Opening the season Thursday night at Soldier Field of the start of the NFL season, and against your main opponent, your big rival, Green Bay. So I like the way the season starts, and I like where it's directed for the Bears.
And I know you had mentioned the quarterback in Mitchell Trubisky, and actually there's been a lot of talk here in Chicago about him and whether he's capable of being the franchise guy and leading this team to a deep run in the playoffs. Last year, I thought Trubisky improved greatly from a statistical standpoint, and when you consider the fact that 2018 was only Trubisky's first year under the Nagy offensive system, continued improvement is to be expected. First off, do you see Trubisky continue to take strides in the right direction in 2019? And secondly, does he have the potential to be the Bears' quarterback of the future?
Well, John, I think that he's got the right coach in Nagy. I've always felt that Matt had so much to offer, comes from a great background of patience with quarterbacking, and like you accurately say, it was just his first year as a starter. So let's let this kid kind of stretch his leg a little bit. Let's let him continue to grow within this offense and the NFL as it is and the complexities of the defense and all the things that a quarterback's got to do. Rarely can they, you know, find that kind of success early on. But I think every arrow is pointed upward for him. He seems to have all the components that will make for, I think, a terrific run in this league. You know, whether he becomes one of the greats, I mean, I don't know. We didn't know if Aaron Rodgers would be one of the greats or Brett Favre or down the line, all the quarterbacks that are in the league, you know, rarely do they begin with fireworks and just like an incredible start. It takes a while for that thing to kind of congeal, and that's what I think that, you know, the Bears team may be ready to go, and their defense is their calling card. But I think the patience with this quarterback and Nagy's, you know, adept way of bringing along the offense and giving him what he needs when he needs it will prove to be the deciding factors on where the Bears go this year, and certainly on the kind of progress he shows from year one as a starter to year two, I think will give a good indication of where his career is headed.
Kevin Harlan here on Sports Talk Chicago, and Kevin, as I had mentioned in your bio, you're also the preseason voice of the Green Bay Packers, and let's talk about them for a moment. Last season was a tough one, to say the least. I mean, there was a coaching change that occurred mid-season. Aaron Rodgers had trouble staying on the field, and the team overall missed the playoffs for the second consecutive season. That's something that usually never happens up in Green Bay. What threat do the Packers pose to the NFC North during this upcoming year, and how do you see them adjusting to the Matt LaFleur offensive system?
Well, it is going to be an adjustment, John. It's a new language. It's a new way of doing things. I don't think there's as much freelancing that we'll see from the quarterback that was so much a part of what Mike McCarthy did with Aaron Rodgers for those 13 years. He really gave him free rein, and they did so many off-schedule plays that it was incredibly tough to defend. But when you don't have veteran receivers, and you have young receivers running routes and trying to adapt to what Rodgers wants, that's why you finish 6-9-1. When Rodgers was his best, he had a capable running game, but he had veteran receivers out there that knew exactly what to do when a play was developing and make reads of what the quarterback wanted as the play was unfolding. Well, he didn't have that last year because the receiving corps was so young. They've got another year under him right now. But this offense is different than what Mike McCarthy ran. Matt LaFleur is running an offense that is predicated on an up-tempo style, breaking the huddle quickly, assembling at the line with a quick snap. And that is kind of counter to what Aaron Rodgers has done in the past. Rodgers has always sat back there in the no-huddle scheme, assembling his team at the line and then trying to read and decipher what the defense was going to give him. And he'll do some of that, but now it's mainly playing in the pocket, quick reads, quick throws, with a very up-tempo type style of offense. So it's going to be a change for Rodgers, and that's going to be interesting to watch. The overriding theme probably for Green Bay is that you've got a quarterback who will be 36, who will probably be a first ballot Pro Football Hall of Famer, but has only been to one Super Bowl, which he won, and you're going to say that this is one of the great quarterbacks of all time, and he only made one Super Bowl? He only played in one Super Bowl? That I think, is going to be, you know, something that's going to be very difficult to swallow. You don't have that very often. Now, Dan Marino certainly had that in Miami, played in one Super Bowl and lost, and then never played in one again. But rarely do you see a quarterback like Rodgers only play in one. So with the clock ticking and with his reputation pretty well intact, the onus now goes on the Packers to build around him, to give him the kind of material he needs to make that push again. And that's the big question. Do they have the right parts around Rodgers to make that run? And if they don't, he'll be 36, and going into next year he'll be 37. And that's going to be very, very difficult because his clock, as I said, is ticking, and that kind of becomes the overriding theme for the Packers. Do they have enough around him to make a run or two with Rodgers still playing very well?
You know, you talked about assembling a team around him, and we see in the NFL today lots of quarterbacks or specific position players getting paid lots, and then teams having to make a decision between paying one guy and letting others go. Do you think the Packers made the right decision in opting to pay Aaron Rodgers, but then letting go guys like Jordy Nelson and others, getting rid of other weapons to pay one guy? Was that the right decision now looking back on it?
You know, I think that every team that's got a signature quarterback is going to face this. So the Packers are no different than Seattle with Russell Wilson and San Francisco with Garoppolo and certainly Brady and New England and on and on. We have, you know, Breeze and New Orleans. They're all making big money, and Dallas is going to face this with Prescott and how they're going to pay him and also try to sign Ezekiel Elliott and keep a young core together because they're really strong. Dallas is really good. So I can't fault Green Bay for what they did. Rodgers, even with the mammoth contract, is still like third or fourth highest paid quarterback in the league, I believe, and that's going to change almost by the month as new quarterbacks sign new deals and they'll sign for more. So the Packers had to do what they had to do, and there's really no way around it. Some of those receivers that they let go, Randall Cobb was let go now with Dallas, and Jordy Nelson was let go and eventually went to the Raiders and now is retiring. I guess I always kind of feel that when you see a player like that released, that no one knows him more than the coaches who have watched him over the years, and they know when he's lost a step or when he's on the way down. And good franchises always seem to get rid of players that may have been name players but are able to move on and get them just before they've really kind of finished the end of their career. With Jordy Nelson, that was very evident, and now he's retired. And and he had blown a knee actually a couple years ago at Green Bay, and really never came back the same way. And Randall Cobb has had a myriad of injuries and has never really lived up to the big contract he signed a couple years ago, and was disappointing. And I don't think the Packers feel like they lost much with either, and because they feel like they've got some younger receivers. The problem becomes when you've got these young receivers, being a guy that's got experience in this league helps tremendously, especially at the receiver position, and especially with a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers that demands so much of his receivers for them to read, like I talked about before. So there's some growing pains with that, but those receivers are now a year more in the league. They've got a little bit more experience in offseason with Rodgers and that offense now that is new under Matt LaFleur. And I would think that passing game will be more potent. But the Packers had to pay Rodgers, as all teams are finding out. And someday, if Trubisky continues on this trajectory with the Bears, they're going to have to pay him. And he's going to demand, you know, the $25, $30 million a year that's the going rate for the top-rung quarterbacks in pro football.
As we now take a look at some other headlines around the league, one that immediately comes to mind is the helmet saga involving Antonio Brown and the Raiders, in which Brown is refusing to play or even practice because the NFL won't allow him to wear a helmet that's now deemed unsafe. Meanwhile, his feet are still severely frostbitten from a cryotherapy session gone wrong, and the Raiders this past offseason signed him to a 3-year, $50 million contract. What do you make of this entire situation, and do you think the Raiders made the wrong decision in signing Brown to a mega contract?
Well, the Raiders needed something for their quarterback because they didn't have it last year, and Amari Cooper was let go or traded to Dallas, as we know, and they needed a splash. They needed something that would give their offense a jolt and help their quarterback, and so we know there were problems in Pittsburgh. And what we're seeing, I think, if what's going on in Oakland is any indication of what kind of guy Antonio Brown is, the Steelers did a pretty good job of camouflaging some of these issues and keeping as much as they could in-house. As we're seeing with the Raiders and all these stories that are popping up, the latest of which is what he fired his chef because the chef had prepared some salmon and left the head of the fish on the plate and in the refrigerator. Antonio Brown read that as a threat. So the guy is really an interesting character, and with a team that is building like the Raiders, that really needs guys that love football. And I think Brown loves football. He's an incredible worker, an unbelievable talent, and probably being, you know, with the career that he's compiled already, a Hall of Fame conversation type of receiver. This is the kind of stuff that the Raiders do not need. It's too much distractions. It's too much about him. And that's not what they're building out there. So if there is an issue and they put him on a certain list before the beginning of the season, he will not be able to play, but they don't have to pay him. And I know that these players know that in their prime, with the few short years they've got to make money, they want to get their dough. So he'll find a way to get back on the field. But the Raiders, you know, did make the trade, and so they've given some things away already. But I think they can get some protection with his salary, which is mammoth. And all they've paid so far, as I understand it, is the $1 million signing bonus. And the rest of it comes, of course, after the season starts. If he is not on that roster and on the special list, they don't have to pay him. Then they don't have him for the whole year. So there's a lot at play here, and they've got to get it straightened out. And the clock is ticking. That's the problem for the Raiders right now and Antonio Brown.
Moving now to some NBA news. This past offseason as well proved to be, I think, one of the most entertaining in recent memory, because we saw so many superstars and so many seemingly franchise players on the move. I mean, Kawhi Leonard, after what he did in Toronto, joined Paul George in L.A., Russell Westbrook was dealt to Houston, and Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving both signed with Brooklyn. How shocked were you by some of these moves, seeing once familiar rosters become much different across the league entering the new year?
Well, it sure has given the people that cover the league a lot to talk about and to think about what's going to happen. Personally, I like players that stay with the team for the duration of their career, for the majority of their career. I think there's something that's very special and unique about that. But I don't blame the players for looking for the best deal. That's part of the thing. And I never thought Kawhi Leonard would ever leave San Antonio, to be quite honest, the strength of that organization and the people that have got running it. But these players have different things on their agenda, and Kawhi is a Los Angeles kid. We know he was traded to the Toronto Raptors, so he didn't have much say there, but he was going into a free agent time, and the Raptors had a chance to sign him, and they made a great offer. But Los Angeles proved to be pretty tough, and going back home proved to be pretty tough for Kawhi to turn down. So that's where he's going, you know, and after signing Paul George to the big contract at Oklahoma City, he is sent out to Los Angeles in a trade. So, I mean, there's so much going on, and it does make for great off-season conversation. I grant you that. When the big names move like this, it seems to me it's like the only sport where all these big names, all-stars, top players in the league are changing teams every year or every couple years, and the players have got the upper hand. They are able to not only, you know, get to the place they want to go, but they can also try to lure other players that are just as good as them to the same location. And now you've got these super teams. So, it puts a little bit of a, drafting and developing puts that kind of on notice. It puts salary cap and trying to manage that and handling the season that may be a loss on the record column, but may be a win because you'll have, a better drafting position. It puts that up to notice. I mean, there's just a lot at play here. And the commissioner, I think, senses in some ways that there seems to be an unevenness about that. And I think he's planning on addressing it at some point down the road and trying to make sure that everything is above board and that everything, you know, has, stipulations to it, and that, that not only are the players satisfied with what their ability to move, but the teams are getting a fair shake, you know, that owners that are paying out all this money are getting a fair shake with what they draft and develop and the stadiums and arenas they put up and the organizations they put together and the scouting staff they have to pay and all this. I mean, there's a lot there, and I just think that it's got to be fair on both sides. And that would be my question right now. Is this system fair to ownership after they have put so much into these players and getting them there? Now these players just leave on a whim because they just don't like the city or they don't like the coach or they're mandating that a coach be fired. I mean, these are things that are kind of tough to watch, actually, from afar. And those are some of the things that I know are in front of Adam Silver's eyes right now, just trying to figure this all out and see where the compass is pointed.
Now, the one good byproduct I see from all of this movement, especially in this past offseason, is that for the first time in a number of years, there seem to be a lot of teams that have a serious shot at an NBA championship. You know, in the past, it's consistently been a matchup between the Warriors and LeBron James, or as in this last year, the Warriors and Kawhi Leonard. But now, Golden State isn't necessarily a favorite in the West, and in the East, with the loss of Kawhi Leonard from Toronto, it seems like it's also wide open. So, at least based on all of these moves and the expectations surrounding certain teams, do you think the NBA is going to be more competitive this year than in comparison to the past 5 years or so?
Well, it seems like the West has gathered a lot of strength here with Kawhi going back to the Western Conference and Golden State staying basically the same. We know we're not going to see Durant for the season with the Nets, and that will change them. Kyrie stays in the East with Brooklyn as well. So, you know, I don't know. I think Toronto had a pretty good team. Leonard was a huge part of it. There's no doubt about that. But Toronto had a good team, and they're, you know, defending champs. And this is a team and an organization that has a great deal of pride, and I think they'll figure out a way to defend it as best they can. Boston going through change, losing Irving, as we talked about, and then the other teams are probably all aiming for Milwaukee because the Bucks seem to have the strongest roster, top to bottom. They've got the reigning MVP and the Coach of the Year, and they've got. Now, you know, defense, which they were dead last in 2 years ago and one of the top defensive teams last year, that seem to got, you know, they've gotten that problem rectified. I think, John, that the East will be kind of what it's been, a little bit wide open with perhaps one team that everyone's shooting for, and in this case it's Milwaukee. I love Philadelphia. Jimmy Butler's now gone, but I love Philadelphia, and I still think they'll be a force in that conference. But the West is probably where so much of the intrigue lies. Both Los Angeles teams are so compelling. Portland is strong. Golden State's going to be strong. Denver is a rising power in the West. Houston now with Russell Westbrook, you know, that changes the way they do things and gives them a strong, if not a stronger position than a year ago when they had Chris Paul running with Harden. So there's so many great stories out there. Zion Williamson with the New Orleans Pelicans is a player that probably, you know, is going to change the way, you know, that team is. And they had some strong parts to it as it was. And I like what Williamson brings them. And he is going to be a sensational rookie in this league. I think he's built for the NBA. I think his game translates to the NBA, and Zion Williamson's going to be just a tremendous player. I predict great things for him. So the Pelicans are a stronger team. Dallas seems to be strengthening now that Porzingis is healthy, and they've got Doncic, who was such a sensational rookie a year ago. They're strong. So all around, Utah is a stronger team. So all the way around, I see great strength. Sacramento is improving. So the West, to me, still probably from top to bottom has the most intrigue and the best talent of the two conferences.
Moving now to your broadcasting careers, I had mentioned in your bio you began calling games at age 22 with the Kansas City Kings before moving to Jayhawks basketball and then Chiefs football. I'm curious, though, because today, of course, you're a nationally recognized voice and you do lots of work for both CBS and TNT. How did you manage to make the transition from a local market in Kansas City to now two national jobs on TV and another on the radio?
Well, it just, you know, there's a little bit of a change, certainly. When you're a local announcer, it becomes your audience is, you know, people that are incredibly interested in your team. And you don't want to be to the point where you're cheerleading and not doing your job, and your job is reporting and conveying what's going on and trying to be as honest as you can. But I think anybody that broadcasts for a local team knows that, you know, criticism is a tough thing for organizations to take from their home team announcers. And so that's kind of an interesting dance that you do with a local announcer and the team. From a national standpoint, you are far more objective. You really don't care who wins. You just like a good play or a good game. And so it's pretty easy to jump on which team has ever been, you know, playing well and to say that the other team is not, if that's the case. And so there's a little bit more objectivity, I think. And what you learn when you make a transition from a local market to a national market is that, you know, that is a move that has to be made, and that you just cannot be, so enthusiastic from the beginning. You can have energy, you can be engaged, you can have urgency in your call, but that a game unwinds a little bit differently to a national audience than it does to a local audience. And the national announcers probably don't get into every nuance of a local team, but a local announcer can do that. And thus you've got the great relationship between an audience that watches or listens to a local broadcaster as opposed to a national broadcaster, because the national broadcaster is dealing more with headlines and generalities, whereas the local announcer is talking about, you know, the smallest details of a player or a play or the workings of what's going on with that team at any given time. And you just kind of learn to maneuver back and forth, but it's a great challenge that all broadcasters face when they do make that local to national move, and I enjoyed it, and I don't think I would be comfortable being a national announcer if I didn't have that local experience. I think the local experience teaches you a great deal, and it teaches you to be up when you're in a losing streak. It teaches you to really call those big plays in a certain way that will really resonate, because you can have that transfer to a national audience on a big play. So I personally like that path. There are some that have gone right to the national market from school or whatever, and I great announcers, but I personally, I think it helped me to have been in a national being in a national position, to have gone through the local channels to get here as a broadcaster.
You know, whether it be on the national or the local level, what's been the greatest moment that you've been a part of as a broadcaster? I know that Kawhi Leonard immediately comes to mind and his amazing shot last year. Has there been a moment better than that one, or is there something else that goes right up there with it?
Well, there are a couple Super Bowl moments which stand out. Malcolm Butler's interception at the goal line was huge when New England was able to hold on against Russell Wilson, the Seattle Seahawks. There have been so many wonderful moments in my career. Clearly, the Kawhi Leonard shot is one that you remember just because it was so historic. There had never been a Game 7 game-winning shot at the buzzer like that. That would clinch a series, and that was special to be a part of that night in Toronto in May, and won't forget that. There are many memories you have along the way, but they all kind of blend together and form this great mosaic of being privileged and feel incredibly blessed and lucky to be in a position to call these games and to do something that you love. It's great to wake up every morning and look forward to my job. I do enjoy it. There are parts of every job that are not that much fun. Traveling is one of them, but not that I'm looking for any sympathy, but in totality, the profession that I'm lucky enough to be in has proven to be, for me, to be a real wonderful way to make a living. I enjoy what I'm doing and enjoy those big moments, and I probably would tell you that I don't know if I've been able to call the biggest moment of my career yet. I still feel I've got some years left, and we'll look forward to that moment that may kind of come out of no place, like Kawhi Leonard or like Malcolm Butler, and I look forward to those coming up in the future and prepare accordingly and hope that I'm ready to call that and give it what it deserves.
And finally, Kevin, before we let you go today, let's go back to this past March where you were calling a matchup between the Mavericks and the Nuggets on TNT. Now, as the game began, a fan sitting courtside spilled some beer onto the court, causing a delay and a massive cleanup near the sideline. Now, my question is this. Is it true that you ended up getting in trouble for describing in detail the type of beer that fell under the ground?
No, I didn't. I probably should think before I say stuff like that. But there was never anything said to me, and I'm not even sure who our beer sponsors are, to be quite honest. At Turner, I'm not sure what brewing company they work with. No one said anything, and they sell beer at college football games now, and they sell it in NBA arenas, and it's kind of part of the deal. I did not get in trouble for saying the names of the beer, and I'm a so-so beer drinker myself, and so I probably rattled off the only beers that I really know, but there are so many out there now, so many microbreweries going on that what I probably did was offend the ones I didn't mention, and they're probably upset with that, and I'll have to be better about that next time the beer is spilled on the floor and slows up play.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for joining me here on today's show. Always a pleasure to talk, and hope to have you on again soon. Thank you.
Great, John. Thank you. And well, I just mentioned that I had seen on SportsCenter the feature they did on you about broadcasting and then being called from the broadcast booth to the mound to pitch. And that's probably about as unique a story as I've ever seen. And you handled the interview with great poise and professionalism. And sure enjoy the fact that we can talk every once in a while. So thank you for calling. It's great to visit with you.
What an honor it was to welcome Kevin Harlan back to today's show as we talk with him about some NFL and NBA news, plus his amazing broadcasting career. And in my opinion, Kevin by far is one of the nicest guys in the business, yet he's also nationally renowned at his job. So for me, it's always a treat to welcome him on this show because we can not only discuss some serious things like the NFL and the NBA and even delve into his career, but he's very cordial, he's very funny, as you heard, laughter throughout our interview, and it's always a great time when he joins this show. So I hope you enjoyed the interview just as much as I did, and thank you again to Kevin for taking the time to come on the show. Well, that does it for us here at Sports Talk Chicago. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at @ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags, on Twitter at John Z Sports, and now on Facebook at John Zagluel. Also, make sure to subscribe to the website. You can find the subscription box on the homepage of the site. Simply type in your email, click yes on the confirmation email, and from there, you'll be subscribed. You'll receive every new podcast and article directly to your email. And remember, Sports Talk Chicago is now on iTunes and Google Play. Simply search Sports Talk Chicago, and every podcast from the 2018-19 calendar year is now available. Feel free to leave us a 5-star rating and/or write a review. Your support is greatly appreciated. Thank you again for listening to today's show, and have a great day.